Welcome. Announce Table with your hosts, Brad Gilmore and Kyle Hubbard.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Announce Table podcast. That's right, a professional wrestling podcast covering the significant events in professional wrestling. My name is Brad Gilmore, and I'm joined by my co-host at this time,
Mr. Kyle Hubbard.
Mr. Kyle Hubbard. Now, fans, listeners, supporters alike, we're going to start this off by saying, me and Kyle earlier this day, not when you're hearing this, but we recorded this today, and earlier in the day, we got a good solid hour knocked out for the Montreal Screwjob. And then, when I go in, Kyle, to start to edit the file and make us sound really good and professional and really radio-like, you know, so our voices sound really, hello, my name is Brad Gilmore.
Put some bass in there.
Put some bass in it. When I go in, I find that the first 17 minutes of our hour-long talk is vanished.
Womp, womp, womp.
So what we have to do, fans, is y'all going to, like we do in professional wrestling oh so many times, you're going to have to suspend disbelief in these first 17 minutes or so while we try to get back on track with the rest of the audio. You ready, Kyle?
I'm ready.
Let's do this. Now, today, first of all, we want to thank y'all for supporting the Announce Table. If you subscribed on iTunes for our pilot episode, we got a lot of good feedback about it from a lot of different people in and outside of the wrestling world. Some other wrestling podcasts gave us huge shout-outs. I mean, some good, you know, whatever, good feedback. So I want to shout
some
out...
Some solid feedback.
Solid feedback. So I want to shout out Houston Wrestling Radio on this podcast. Make sure you go over and check out their podcast. They're more of a week-to-week recap show and always got some great interviews also. But yeah, go check them out, HoustonWrestlingRadio.com. But today, on the Announce Table, the second episode, we are talking about the infamous... This is past famous. It's the infamous Montreal Screwjob. Now, Kyle, like I did in the first time we went through this, I'm going to read what Wikipedia said about the Montreal Screwjob. Okay, here it goes. The Montreal Screwjob was a controversial, real-life professional wrestling incident in which World Wrestling Federation owner Vince McMahon and other WWF employees covertly manipulated the predetermined outcome of the main event match between Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels at Survivor Series pay-per-view November 9th, 1997 in Montreal, Quebec, Canada at the Molson Center.
What? That's not the most thrilling explanation of the whole thing I've never heard. I don't know, man.
I think we almost could end the podcast on that because it's such a good explanation of what happened.
So well put together.
Yes. It was a shoot screw job, they also call it, which I didn't read before. A shoot screw job. Now, what happened, fans? We all know Bret and Shawn, two bitter rivals, right? Went face to face for the WWF Championship at Survivor Series, which happened to be Bret Hart's last match in the WWF before he went to the WCW World Championship Wrestling. Now, Kyle, this was a heated night.
Very heated. Very, very heated.
And there was a lot of build up to this night.
This is a long time in the making for these two guys. This is destiny. This is a big, big event in both of these guys' lives.
And it happened back, and I hate to say this, but it happened back when Survivor Series still meant something. You know?
No, you're completely right to say that. When they still had Survivor Series matches on Survivor Series.
Yeah, that time. Remember? Remember that time?
Yeah.
So what happened, we all know, but we'll get into that. But to start this off, Bret and Shawn roughly came into the WWF around the same time. I think Bret, a few years earlier, he came over from Stampede Wrestling and then he was teamed with Jim Neidhart and Jimmy Hart, and they were the Hart Foundation. Imagine that.
Perfect.
Good name.
Perfect.
You know, I always wonder where they came up with the foundation part. Like, that wouldn't be the first thing I think of.
I'm sure they had a few options, like maybe the Hart Dynasty.
That actually is a thing.
Duo. Yeah, the Higher Dynasty is actually a thing, which is probably why my mind went to that first.
Yeah. The short-lived thing, but a thing no less. I don't know. I would have gone with, like, the Heart Trio or...
Yeah, that could work.
Three the Heart Way? No? Anyway.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Three the Heart Way isn't terrible. But then, and then a couple years...
Actually, I think that should have been it, actually.
You think the Three the Heart Way. I like it.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
But then, I believe it was, then Sean came in, I believe from the AWA, Vern Gagne's AWA, and he came in with his partner, Marty Jannetty, and they were the Rockers.
The Rockers.
Do you have any Rockers memories?
You know, nothing that I can just pull off the top of my head. Like, I'm sure there is something there that's probably been suppressed, but really, no.
No.
I mean, with the Heart Foundation, I remember, you know, after the fact, years after it originally aired, going back and watching the WrestleMania 3 match with the Bulldogs and really enjoying that match quite a bit.
You know, I need to go watch WrestleMania 3. I think I've only seen it once, and I think I only watched it, not even for Hogan Andre, for Macho and
Steamboat.
Steamboat, yeah. But, but yeah, they were definitely, the Rockers were a great tag team, and you know, infamously, they broke up on the episode of The Barber Shop with Brutus, the Barber Beefcake, where Shawn Michaels super kicks Marty Jannetty and throws him through the glass.
That's probably my most vivid Rockers memory.
And yeah, me too.
It's not a very good one for Marty.
It's not, no, because that's when Marty went down and Shawn became the superstar.
Right, yeah.
Both men had Intercontinental title reigns. Which back then was the big singles title, and I guess now since the unification is the secondary singles title again.
I would hope it comes back in prominence, because when Shawn and Brett were holding it, it was a really big deal.
It was a huge deal to have the title. Now you got to think, this was in a time in wrestling where the little guy, where Shawn and Brett were considered little guys. And
for sure,
you know, you were headlined by guys like Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior and Andre Giant, like huge guys, and you know, Paul Orndorff, like just big muscular guys. And for Shawn and Brett to get this run, you know, as these two, I don't know, these two young smaller guys, it was a big deal back then. And
for sure. And you know, it's often said that, you know, before all the fallout that they had that we're obviously going to go over, when they were friends, I'm sure a lot of that came from the fact that they were cut from the same cloth and they were, you know, climbing up the same hill as the smaller guys in that time period, you know?
Yeah, they're probably going out there trying to show Vince, like, hey, you could put titles on us and we'll put butts in seats.
Right.
But yeah, they definitely, now they were friends. Now there's several, you know, there's so many books, documentaries, DVDs, but everything about the Montreal Screwjob, and a lot of them produced by WWE themselves. And, one of them was one of my favorites was, WWE Greatest Rivalries, Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart. And this is when, they sat down in a room with JR and they talked about their whole career together, more so, you know, what they went through together. And they did start off as friends. Brett was saying, like, Shawn would come over to his house and play with his kids and stuff like that. And they were actually pretty good friends. And I can only think because of that camaraderie of trying to prove to everybody that the small guys can make it, that, yeah, they were good friends and they bonded. And they had that infamous match that was never aired on Saturday night's main event. 2 out of 3 falls. The Heart Foundation versus the Rockers for the WWF Tag Team Championships. And within the first few minutes of the match, the top rope breaks.
Ouch. You can't do anything without a top rope.
No. We all remember when Vengeance, or we probably all don't remember it, but Vengeance, when Alberto Del Rio and John Cena had a last man standing match in a broken ring. Terrible match. You can't do anything.
Oh, yeah.
Without
can't
a top
do
rope.
Anything. And it's like these guys go out there and they're not prepared for this, you know. So everything that they had come up with is just out the window. It's
completely
terrible.
Gone out of the window. Can't do anything about it. But yeah, they were legitimate friends at first. And I think they started I don't know, when do you think that they started to kind of become enemies?
You know, I'm sure that it came in degrees, but I mean, honestly, given how heated that it really got between them two, I bet it was building, the minute they were both on their own solo, Even if it wasn't too overt and in everybody's face at that time, I'm sure that they were always competing with one another, and it obviously it just intensified over the years.
It might have been a friendly rivalry that turned into like a legitimate, like, I don't like you rivalry. And, you know, I would have to think that it had to have started, like, okay, so Sean became, you know, turned face and started being this big baby face for the company. And it led into their, you know, crazy famous match. The most, one of the most talked about matches of all time in WrestleMania history, let alone professional wrestling history. The match at WrestleMania 12, the 60-man Iron Man match.
60-minute Iron Man
match. Oh, I said, did I say 60-man?
Which would be an insane match.
The 60-man Iron Man match. Whoa. That's a long match.
Yeah, that would take like a month.
Yeah, that'd be like a month long. Continuous stream on the WWE Network. So Sean and Brett, 60-minute Iron Man match. God, I keep screwing that up. And it famously went into overtime. Gorilla Monsoon came out and said, "This will be sudden death. Next man to get a pinfall victory will win." And Shawn Michaels won. Vince McMahon delivered his great soundbite of "The boyhood dream has come true."
Yeah.
And Shawn,
an amazing moment for Shawn Michaels and for wrestling period.
Now, I will say this, Kyle Hubbard. I will say that I could have told you, had I been as smart as a fan now, you know, back then, I could have told you that Shawn Michaels would have won that match. And I'll tell you why. He had probably the most fantastic, greatest entrance, probably still to this day. He ziplined from the top of the arena to the middle of the ring or to the crowd and then got in the ring. Like, you're not going to top that entrance. Why are you going
to
do that?
Down from the heavens to win the WWF championship? I mean, come on.
I'm sure Brett was pissed off.
If I was Brett, I would be infuriated. Like, that is the most projecting the winner case ever. Like, there's never been such a telltale sign who is going to win the match before the match happened in history.
and the thing is, Bretta, I think, came out first.
Yeah, I would hope so. I really hope they put... That would be the ultimate insult to injury, is to...
If he came out next.
Come out after that.
Oh, I would hate that so much.
Yeah, I would feel terrible for him.
Oh, man. So they had a great match. They went 60 minutes.
Perfect match.
Perfect match. And went into overtime. Shawn Michaels wins. And now tell me what you heard, Kyle, because I've heard different accounts of what happened once the match ended.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So the match ends and Shawn Michaels wants his moment. And I think we've pretty much heard the same thing, just in varying degrees of intensity. What I heard is Shawn Michaels told Bret Hart to get the fuck out of my ring.
Oh, yeah. And, there you go.
So he could have his moment. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's a... Whoa. See, what I heard is I heard Shawn told the referee to tell Bret to get the hell out of the ring.
Yeah. And
I didn't hear the F-bomb dropped. But that's probably... We'll see, but you kind of got to feel him in that.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, every wrestler is probably thinking that when they're in that moment. Now, not every wrestler would be that like dickhead about it, but every wrestler wants that moment.
Well, you gotta think, this is what, 95 or 90, 1996 Shawn?
So yeah, this is 96 like, Shawn.
This is peak of Shawndom. Like,
this is when Shawn Michaels is at his most Shawn Michaels. Yes. So there's definitely a good chance he's throwing some verbal jabs at Brett after that match. But with that said, he deserved his moment. I mean, and it is such a great moment. I mean, he played it so well, like his facial expressions, him being kneeled in the middle of the ring. It's
yeah,
awesome.
Crying.
It really
he was
is.
Crying, yeah. Holding the belt. Yeah, great moment. Great moment. But after the match, Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels did not shake hands.
Right.
Which is mainly customary, especially when two baby faces fight one another. You know, you sure. Shake hands and, you know, boom, you go over and, you know, you leave the match. But they did not shake hands. Which led to a lot of the people watching the pay-per-view and a lot of the wrestlers backstage to think that Shawn and Brett had legitimate heat with one another. And if you look at the promos building up to that match, like Shawn's doing these crazy marathon, like running up and down stairs and doing all these crazy like chin-ups and all this like stuff, and then Brett's kind of just like jogging and he's swimming like one lap.
Well, the whole thing for WrestleMania 12 was to put all the put the company on Sean's back for sure. I mean, leading up to it, even down to the entrance, I mean, it was Sean's night.
Well, what you got to remember is right after that WrestleMania match, Bret Hart took a 7-month long hiatus.
That's right.
And that's he was negotiating his contract, and that's when he went and did his Western.
Right, which is awesome because before even he was in the Hart Foundation, one of the gimmicks they wanted to stick him with was some cowboy gimmick, so like Cowboy Bret or something like that.
Cowboy Bret Hart.
Something like that. But the point is, years later, he was able to reclaim his rightful gimmick and do it on that TV show.
Be a TV cowboy. Oh, yeah, it was a TV right. cowboy. He was a TV show cowboy. And
for a very brief spell.
Yeah, I don't even think that did that show have more than one episode. I don't know. I don't even know what the name of the show is. Like Lonesome Dove or something like that.
I don't know anything about it. Like, I don't know anything about that show.
Something super weird and
unnecessary.
Wasn't it talked about in Hitman Hart Wrestling with Shadows?
Yeah, I think they had some footage of him on set actually.
Yeah, and he looked foolish. I just never would believe Bret Hart as a cowboy.
I know, it's probably a good thing they didn't stick him with that gimmick then.
Right, Cowboy Bret Hart instead of Hitman. But see, I didn't really believe him as a Hitman either.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's something that started in Stampede, wasn't it?
I don't know. I don't have that much knowledge of Stampede wrestling. Not as much as I should.
You know what? Listeners, you let us know. Did the Hitman originate in Stampede or was that a WWF creation?
I have to think it was a Vince thing. Vince probably, you're the Hitman. I don't know. I could be wrong. That just sounds Vincey. Sounds real Vincey.
It does sound Vincey. I'll give you that.
But he leaves for 7 months, right? And during these 7 months is when Shawn Michaels really becomes the showstopper.
Oh, yeah.
And the main event, the icon. And he has all those nicknames. And Shawn Michaels actually might have the most nicknames in professional wrestling history.
Rightfully so.
But like he had Mr. WrestleMania. Heartbreak Kid. Mr. Hall of Fame is even a nickname for him. Like, gosh, man. Sean, pick a name. Pick a name.
Pick a name and stick with it, brosive.
Right? The Undertaker has been the Undertaker, the Dead Man, the Phenom. The American Badass, though.
Which is my favorite. I love the American Badass.
Are you being sarcastic, Kyle Hubbard?
I'm not. I do, but that's not a conversation for now.
This is we're on the Montreal Screwjob. So Bret leaves for 7 months, and I remember like some documentary. I think it was the Greatest Rivalries documentary. Like Owen calls Bret the next day from the arena from Raw, and he's like, "Hey man, you know, people think you and Sean actually hate each other," and Bret going, "Great, you know, good. I want him to think that, you know." That's why when I come back, it's going to be that much better. And
that unknowing, you know, even with the boys in the back, I think that, you know, that's great. That's really good stuff.
Now, during these 7 months, though, there was a lot of negotiations going on. A lot of negotiations for Bret Hart's contract. And this was actually when he was, this is when WCW made their first overture to Bret the Hitman Hart. And I believe this was, around WrestleMania, after WrestleMania 12, during the 7-month hiatus, he was waiting on a new contract to be negotiated from Vince and WWF and got an offer from his rival. In October 1996, Bret Hart declined a 3-year, $8.4 million offer from WCW, opting to sign an unprecedented 20-year deal that had been offered by Vince McMahon, which promised to make Bret Hart the highest-paid wrestler in the company's history and secure him a major role with the company for the next 20 years.
20 years.
That's a long time.
20 years. That's a huge amount of time. I mean, WCW was offering a huge amount of money. There's big numbers on both sides of this coin.
$8.4 million. But it doesn't say, do you know how much money they're offering Bret for the 20-year deal?
For the 20-year deal, I know that it was broken down into different sections because, to the best of my knowledge, the 20-year deal was divided up in 3 years active roster, 7 years as some sort of a backstage road agent or agent for matches, I believe, and then another 10 years as a company standby. So I think the pay grade changed as his positions changed, if you follow my drift.
I get it. So like he would get like X amount for in-ring, and then it would probably lower a little bit when he was a road agent, and then lower even more when he was just a standby guy.
Right. But it would all at the end, it would all sum out to an agreed upon number at the beginning of everything.
And I mean, it's got that number had to be a little more. Was it more than what WCW was offering?
No. What I read is that for Bret Hart to make the kind of money that WCW offered in WWF, he would have to have stick with that contract until 2008, until it all evened out. So he would make in WWF, in WCW, he would make that, how much was it, $8 million in 3 years?
$8.4 million for 3 years.
All right, so that would take from 1997 to 2008 for him to make in WWF.
Wow, that's a lot of, that's a long time. 2008?
Yeah.
So you're telling 2008. Me, okay, so if he would have signed in October 96 with WCW, that means by 1999, he would have made the same money as he would have made with WWE in 2008.
Right, exactly.
So to me, first off, you got to be a real loyal guy to take that offer from Vince. And then, secondly, you've got to be off your fucking rocker if you're Vince McMahon to offer a 20-year deal to somebody to, you know, Bret Hart, I don't know, like at the time, you know, the most money, you know, I don't know if Bret Hart would be worth the most money for a 20-year deal.
I mean, you're absolutely right. And to think that Vince McMahon would offer a contract for that length of time in that time period is a little insane. But I guess that shows how much he was committed to the Bret Hart character. You know, they had spent a lot of time building him. And I'm sure at that time he felt if WCW was to get their hands on him, it would not be good.
I mean, but do you think, because to me, now you're like I know you watched wrestling a little bit before I did. So you were kind of there in that Bret Hart heyday. To you, was Bret Hart the biggest deal ever? Or because to me, I never saw, and I know wrestling fans are going to hate me for this, but I never saw Bret Hart as the be all end all superstar.
Well, I think you know what it was. And at this time period when he was, you know, ruling the roost, I was not as into it as I would be a few years later. But I think what it was is the audience at this time was so small compared to what it had been during the Hulkamania era that the people that stuck around were like, you know, wrestling fanatics. So to them, Bret Hart was that guy, you know, because that's what they had been missing in during the Hogan era. That's what they wanted to see on top. Now, granted, I mean, business was down across the board at this time period. Is Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels to blame for that to a certain degree? I don't know. I mean, that's a different conversation. But I get your point of never seeing him as a top guy. Had he been a few years too early or a few years too late, maybe it wouldn't have happened. But for the time period, I think he was perfect.
I mean, I'm not saying that he wasn't the I just never saw him as the guy. And I guess because right when I got in, like we said on the last episode, is I got in right when, you know, Rock and Austin were like the hottest things ever. So it's like, so to me, when I see Bret Hart, I'm like, okay, you know, maybe not the best guy ever, but you know, at the same time, I could see why, you know, I can't see why Vince would think this is the guy to run with for 20 years or for 10 years even.
Well, okay, fair enough. I mean, do you think that there's anybody that would be at that time period would be worthy of a contract like what Bret Hart got? That much of a commitment? Do you think anyone was worthy of it?
I don't know. It's hard to say, like, who is worthy of something and who's not. But at the same time, like, to me, you know, knowing how the late 90s were and how, you know, people were reacting to certain people, like, to me, the Bret Hart character was kind of getting stale. Like, the always the good guy.
Oh, for sure.
And then even it's like then Vince was like, all right, you know, everyone has attitude, like Austin, attitude, right? And, you know, what led to the Attitude Era, obviously. But, like, you know, then D-Generation X, you know, was real more to me what the late 90s, early 2000s were going to be about, were those guys, you know, kind of, you know, going off, even seems like they're going off script a lot. To me, D-Generation X was always just going off script. And saying things whoa, are you supposed to say that?
Yeah, I think they legitimately pushed some boundaries.
Yeah, definitely. So it's like, to me, those guys were the future. And then I think that's almost why Vince decided to do that whole you know, nationalist angle with Brett, where he hated the United States, but he loved Canada, you know, to try to give him some kind of edge to me. But really, if you think about it, that kind of ruined Brett's character.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But I don't think, I think maybe if he had done that character and then not just gone to WCW where they didn't know how to use him, I think he could have recovered from that had he stayed in WWE as a character. But I do agree with you that
the weird thing
character.
About it was, it's like he's, you know, he's a good guy when he's in Canada, but he's a bad guy in the US. So it's like, when he goes to Canada, does that mean he has to work heels, and in the US he works baby faces? You see what I'm saying? Like,
that's a good question. Yeah, like, I understand that.
Yeah, so I think it would confuse wrestling fans as to, is what's going on? is he a good guy or is he a bad guy?
And, but I mean, it's a cool phenomenon, though, that he was a good guy in some parts of the world and then here he wasn't. I mean, that's kind of cool. You know, I like that.
No, yeah, it is cool. Now, getting back to what led up to this Montreal Screwjob is...
Right.
So, you know, they have these contract negotiations, and Bret Hart's already kind of like, F you, Vince, you know, you're not living up to what you said you were going to do.
And for
several months prior to that, Bret and Shawn had several backstage arguments and altercations. They actually had a real-life fist fight at a house show in Hartford, Connecticut. After that was like right after what we actually talked about on the last show, where Shawn Michaels made the, even though you've had some sunny days, my friend, comment.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure Brett loved that.
The fist fight was after that comment, right?
The fist fight, yeah. The comment preempted that fist fight.
Okay.
And Shawn Michaels actually got suspended for 2 months after that. And I believe when he came back, you know, because you got to think, they were leading up to WrestleMania 13 at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Brett, it was always in Brett's mind that he and Shawn were going to work again at WrestleMania 13 in the return match. And then, you know, boom, there we are, WrestleMania rematch. And Shawn was the champion, I believe, going in a couple months prior to WrestleMania 13. And that's when he had the knee injury, if you remember. Shawn had the knee injury, and he went out and he forfeited the title. On Raw, that was the infamous Lost My Smile thing. And, yes, the very infamous Lost My Smile promo by Shawn Michaels. And he forfeited the title because he had the knee injury, and he was saying he was going to have major knee surgery. But Brett still seems like he thinks, because if you watch that Greatest Rivalries DVD, to me, Bret Hart seems like he's not buying a word Shawn Michaels is saying right then and there when they're in the room with JR. Like, the whole time, he's kind of just like...
I absolutely agree with that.
He's just kind of like, yeah, Shawn, you're trying to cover up your tracks. To me, this honestly is like, Bret Hart was like, yeah, Shawn, you're just trying to cover up your tracks because you're a Christian now, da-da-da-da-da. I mean, because he was like... Because he even would say, like, I mean, I know knees are funny, but then you'd get in the ring and you do a backflip. And Shawn was like, oh, well, yeah, you know, I just did that to piss off everybody. And so, you know, so Shawn drops the belt, and that actually led up to somehow... And I don't know if you remember how, somehow WrestleMania 13 main event, wasn't it Taker versus Sid Vicious?
Sid Vicious,
for the WWE
Championship. No, I don't remember how that happened. I really don't. It should have been Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart. I'll just say that.
It should have been Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, too. I mean, but hey, you got to start, you got to continue the streak every WrestleMania, right?
Yeah, I don't think the streak was even the streak at this point.
I don't want to get too off topic, so we'll save that we need to do a streak podcast, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that might be next. But anyway, so Shawn and Brett don't have that WrestleMania 13 match, but it says here, according to my notes, on October 11th in San Jose, California in 1997, Hart claimed that he spoke to Shawn Michaels about being professional and trusting one another in the ring. He also said that he would have no problem putting over Michaels if McMahon asked him to. Right. And then he said, Shawn came back and said, well, thanks, Brett. I wouldn't do the same to you, for you, rather. Yeah. So Hart said that, you know, Shawn said, I wouldn't do the same to you, Brett. And that's really what pissed Brett Hart off. and really started that, you know, digging that rift, you know, because they said, okay, I know you made the Sunny Days comment, and then I remember Bret Hart made a comment at the Slammy Awards about those two cheerleaders in Syracuse, in Syracuse, which Shawn Michaels was legitimately beat up by, I think, Navy SEALs or something.
Yeah.
Some, like, military people, but he called them cheerleaders. So, like, they started, you know, going back and forth with one another. And that, see, Bret Hart was more of a dick than people realize.
I definitely agree with you.
Yeah, he said a lot of dicky things, but Shawn kind of always got the brunt of it. But anyway, so that kind of starts, boom, causing this rift. But Shawn came back and said, no, Bret, think about our whole career. I've always put you over. In the WWE's first ladder match ever at Wrestling Challenge in 92, I put you over, right? He was like, main event of Survivor Series 92, I put you over. I lost to you in a steel cage match in 93, put you over. I don't have a problem putting you over if storyline goes that way. But anyway, so somehow after WrestleMania 13, Undertaker, I believe, drops the belt back to Bret. SummerSlam 97. And then
with Shawn Michaels as the special guest referee.
Yes, and that's when Shawn, I think, hit Undertaker with the chair.
Right.
I think Bret spit in Shawn's face, right? And then Shawn was gonna hit Bret with the chair. Bret ducks, knocks Taker out, and that's actually what set up the first Hell in a Cell match at Bad Blood, which also was the debut of Kane. Look at that.
Yep.
Look at how wrestling works here. But anyway,
it's beautiful. So beautiful.
It is beautiful. So then, I guess Shawn won the Royal Rumble, right? Did he win the Royal Rumble?
Leading into where? Into what?
Into Mania 90. I don't know. I'm confusing myself.
Well, he won
95 and 96, right?
I believe so. And I know Austin won 97.
Oh, that's because he cheated and beat Bret Hart.
Right, right. Yeah, okay. Shawn Michaels, he main evented at 11 and 12, so he won both those years.
Oh, that's right, that's right. He wrestled Diesel at 11.
Right.
And that wasn't even the main event, right? Wasn't the main event Bam Bam Bigelow?
Bam Bam Bigelow, and who the fuck was it? It was a football player.
God.
I can't remember who it was.
I know.
I don't follow football. But
hey,
Bam Bam main event in WrestleMania. How about that?
Look at that. And then 2 years later, he was in ECW.
Hell yeah.
Who did he fight? He fought that left tackle, like the most famous left tackle of all time.
I have no idea, man.
Oh, man, that's going to drive me insane. God damn it. Anyway, off all that. So anyway, Shawn, Taker drops the belt to Bret at SummerSlam 97, and the next big four pay-per-view is Survivor Series. And now I'm leading up into this. They had a whole bunch of talks of like, hey guys, you know, we should trust one another. You know, I believe in you. Blah, 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 blah. Right? And, you know, do you think just because he was so flamboyant and out there, do you think Shawn just got a lot of bad rap just because he was Shawn Michaels?
Yeah, I would imagine that a young Shawn Michaels in his drug days was probably really unlikable.
I mean, yeah, because those are all, like, all through those years is when he was, like, high on it, too, right? Like, no pun intended, but he was, like, super...
Yeah. No, I mean, I can imagine that he was just an egomaniac. He was brash, you know, and I could see how that would piss somebody off, especially a traditionalist like Bret Hart. You know, they're completely different in that time period, just the way that they are. They're just very different.
Yeah.
At least allegedly, you know.
Allegedly. But like we said, what makes you think Bret Hart was actually kind of a dickhead?
Well, my biggest criticism of Bret Hart, I think he's just a huge mark for himself. And I think it would be best to say what actually happened at Survivor Series and then break it down from there.
Okay.
So Bret Hart is going in to Survivor Series 97 as the WWF champion.
Correct.
Shawn Michaels is the challenger.
Correct.
There's a lot of dispute how to end the match between all parties involved. And basically, Bret Hart does not want to lose the title belt in Canada, right?
Yeah, that's the big thing. He doesn't want to lose in Canada.
Right. He doesn't want to lose to Shawn Michaels.
He especially doesn't want to lose to Shawn Michaels.
Right, so losing to Shawn Michaels in Canada is like the worst possible scenario for Bret Hart.
Nothing it can go wrong. You know, nothing else would make Bret Hart more mad than losing to Shawn Michaels in Canada. Now, think about what we're saying here. He doesn't want to lose in his home country. It's like, it's me not wanting to lose, you know, in Minnesota. I'm not from Minnesota, but it's in the United States. And guess what? What if Sean said I don't want to lose in the United States?
Even though he's from San Antonio, I can't lose in the United anywhere in the United States.
I can't lose in Des Moines, Iowa. I refuse.
But here's the dilemma.
Yeah.
Bret Hart, in his contract, has creative control over the last 30 days. Ooh. Since Vince McMahon has pulled out of that 20-year contract and has told him to pursue better wealth in WCW, that 30-day effect has kicked in. Okay, so now we are at Survivor Series 1997, which is Bret Hart's last date with the WWF working for Vince McMahon.
So it happened. It just so happened to end on the pay-per-view. That was like his legitimate last day.
As far as I know, I mean, allegedly, I mean, I have no idea if he could have appeared at Raw the next night. I know that the WCW contract didn't kick in until like 23 days, give or take. Don't quote me on that number, but something like that.
You're correct. The December 5th, 97 is when WCW's contract started. And Survivor Series was the 9th of November. So yeah, you're about right there.
Okay,
good job. Good days.
Yeah, see, look at that.
Look at you.
But so, I mean, basically what we're at is Bret Hart's at the end of his contract. He has creative control on the last 30 days of that contract. And he is facing Shawn Michaels, the person he refuses to lose to, in Canada, the place he refuses to lose in, right?
Yes.
So this is just a clusterfuck of people pulling in different directions, Bret Hart refusing to drop the belt, Vince McMahon imploring that he loses the belt. There's a lot of shit hitting the fan, to put it eloquently.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a whole lot of shit hitting the fan at this point. Like, I mean, so it's like, not only do you have your top guy leaving the company, he's also your world champion, but he doesn't want to lose his world title before the last date that he's going to be in the company. Whoa, you got a lot of stuff swirling, and not only will he not drop the title before he leaves the company, he doesn't want to drop it to the next guy who's considered the top guy.
This is being in between the rock and the hard place, to put it, you know, to be blunt. So what does Vince McMahon do in a situation like this?
Okay, let's break that down. Okay, so say, you know, put yourself in Vince's shoes, you know, because just, I guess, like a year or so prior, remember he had Alundra Blaze, who was the WWF Women's Champion, defect to WCW as Medusa with the WWF Women's Championship, and drops it in the trash can on national television. So it's like, that pretty much shows everybody that's like, okay, this, you know, in WCW's audience, is like, okay, well, obviously, even the WWF superstars don't care about their title. And to me, it diminished the women's championship in some regards. So it's like, if I'm Vince, I'm thinking, I don't want that to happen again.
It took a few years to come back after that.
Yeah, definitely.
No, yeah, if I'm Vince McMahon, I'm thinking, I'm going to do whatever I have to do to make sure that doesn't happen with my company's top belt.
Yeah, the for the last, 30, 40 years, the premier title, honestly. I mean, because you got to think up until that time.
You had
the NWA championship and the WCW championship came thereafter. But, like, really, I mean, New York is where, I mean, if you look at any wrestling documentary, read any book, listen to any podcast, read any article, it's always like, well, to make it in this business, you got to go to New York, you know, aka WWF. So it's like, this is the top title in wrestling. So you don't want to, and you're already losing to WCW at this time. So you don't want to, you know, also have to drop.
Right, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So if I'm Vince, I'm like, well, I got to get the title back. Now, I believe, though, Bret did say that he would drop the title. He said he wanted to drop the title to Stone Cold, like at a house show or something like that.
Right, yeah, he did. It is important to note that Bret was willing to work with other scenarios, just not Shawn Michaels in Canada.
But see, Kyle, I mean, that's the thing that I was saying about Bret being kind of self-centered in a lot of ways. It's like, I'll do anything else. I'll drop the title the next night on Monday Night Raw when I'm not under contract, but I'm not going to lose to Shawn. it's a little immature.
That's hard to argue with. I completely agree with you. I mean, okay, yeah. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I love Brett, and I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the match, because the way that it went down is kind of ruthless. I think it's really ruthless the way that it went down.
Yeah, definitely a little bit ruthless. Now, do we want to talk about the match first. Okay, so let's talk about you want to talk about the planning up until, or do you want to talk about the actual in-ring match?
I want to go over the match. I just want to say what happened, and then we can look what led up to that and what happened afterwards.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so basically the match is going on, as Brett and Shawn Michaels had talked about and discussed in the ring and prior. Things are going according to plan. And then Shawn Michaels puts Brett in Brett's own signature move, the sharpshooter. And Earl Hebner, that was the referee, correct?
Yeah, referee Earl Hebner, also the same guy who was the referee for the WrestleMania 12 main event.
Right. So he does a real half-ass, hey, Brett, do you want to tap? He doesn't even go down to Brett's level. He rings the bell. The match ends like
he
that.
He jumps
like
out of the ring.
Remember. Yeah, the referee fucking bolts.
Yeah.
He goes, Vince McMahon is at ringside. It's a clusterfuck. But the thing I want to highlight is that it was with the sharpshooter.
Yeah.
It was Bret Hart's own move against him that was used to strip him of the title without his knowledge.
Yeah,
that's either poetry or ruthless, and I'm pretty sure that's pretty fucking ruthless.
I think it was ruthless. Now, here's the thing. This is another reason Vince wanted the title off of Brett, because in the wrestling business, there's a term that we didn't go over last time. It's called doing the honors. And what that is pretty much when you're leaving the company, if you're leaving a professional wrestling organization and you're the champion, or you're just leaving in general, you go out looking at the lights. You go out losing, you put the other guy over to show the respect for the next guy, right? So that was another thing. So I'll read to you. There's a few theories. Now, it's really unknown what really happened up until, like, who planned it or whatever. Now, originally, we all thought, okay, this is Vince's idea. Vince cooked this all up. You know, because remember, he took all the blame for it. The next night on Raw, it was the Brett screwed Brett. I have no sympathy whatsoever for Brett. And we all thought it was Vince. Now, what I'm reading a couple different things about this. And the thing I'm reading is the Saturday, I believe, before Survivor Series, McMahon met with Jim Ross and Jim Cornette in a hotel room and planned out the Montreal Screwjob. Now, prior to researching for this podcast, I have never heard that before.
I haven't heard that before.
I never heard that Jim Ross and Jim Cornette met in a hotel room to plan the screw job. Now, it says it is unclear how many people knew of the impending screw job, but McMahon's close aides, Gerald Briscoe and Robert Remus, which is Sergeant Slaughter, had been involved also in the planning. So that's one thing that now – so far it says McMahon, Jim Ross, and Jim Cornette planned it. Then also, it was like, well, McMahon, Gerald Briscoe, and Sergeant Slaughter planned it. But then what we always hear nowadays, after Shawn kind of came out and broke, you know, kayfabe about it almost, is that it was Shawn, Triple H, and McMahon.
Right, right. And that's the one that I hear most commonly.
That's the one nowadays I hear the most about. And that's the one I choose to believe the most, because it makes the most sense. Now, what it said happened was they were all in a room talking about the finish. And they all knew that Brett didn't want to put Shawn over. And Triple H said, all right, F it. If he doesn't want to do business, we're going to do business for him.
Was that Triple H's first big executive decision?
I think that was, we got to see Triple H make those executive moves before he married Vince's daughter.
Yeah, so that was just a precursor of what was to come.
Exactly. So pretty much he was like, and then Shawn's like, all right, what do you want me to do? You know, I'll do what you want me to do, but just, you know, what do you want? And this led into what happened. Now, Shawn and Brett and Pat Patterson, who's the agent pretty much at the time for all the big main events, met earlier in the day on Sunday. And this is how I read it was supposed to happen, right?
Okay.
Hart said that he agreed to let Michaels put him in the sharpshooter, But at this time, referee Earl Hebner would be unconscious, right? The rest of the match would proceed as thus. Hart would grab Michaels' foot, reverse the hold, putting him in the sharpshooter. Shawn would submit to the hold, but the referee was still unconscious. Hart would then let go of the hold, try to revive the referee, but Michaels would hit Hart with a sweet chin music finisher and make a pin. A second referee would run to the ring, followed by Owen Hart, Jim Neidhart, and Davey Boy Smith. And the second referee would start the count, but Owen and Davey Boy would break the pin. The original referee would recover, start to make another count, but Hart would kick out, setting up 5 minutes worth of brawling, resulting in a disqualification.
Yeah, okay.
Now that is what I read.
There's so much service to Hart in that description of the match.
So what do you think?
I think that, you know, the way it should have went down was Michaels puts Brett sharpshooter, Brett reverses to put Michaels in the sharpshooter, then the super kick, you know, like, and that's where it should have ended.
So you do think that Brett should have put Shawn over?
With no question. Okay. Without a doubt.
Just so we're in agreement on that. Then, boom. So anyway, back to the in-ring match. You know, referee Earl Hebner calls for the bell after Shawn puts like a... And you know what's funny? Is that if you look at the tape, and they pointed this out in the Greatest Rivalries DVD, is Shawn was originally putting the sharpshooter on backward.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, and Brett hollered up to him in the middle of the ring, was like, hey, you're doing it backwards, cross my feet the other way. And Brett said, I literally put the bullets in my own gun. Like,
yeah, no, that's hilarious.
So anyway,
that's
Shawn hilarious. Turns him, referee calls for the bell, jumps out of the ring. Shawn's looking around like, what the hell just happened? They hand him the title. He's upset. They're playing the music, and he leaves the ring. He leaves the arena, to my knowledge. To my knowledge, he had the his bags by the door, you know, ready.
There is an if you remember in Wrestling with Shadows, there is that interaction between Shawn and Brett backstage after the match.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Now Shawn kept saying though in Wrestling with Shadows in that back, I didn't know anything about it. I have no idea, man.
Completely denied it. And this is right after. So this is in the heat of the moment.
Yeah.
Shawn's denying it.
And Brett seemed to kind of believe him in the movie.
Yeah, he definitely did. I mean, he seemed like, okay, whatever. You know, he was more concerned with Vince at this point.
Yeah, he definitely seemed like he like was like, okay, I believe you, Shawn. And Hunter was saying, I didn't know it either. I was like, I have no idea.
Right, right.
And then I remember Brett's wife being like, that's bullshit. Yes, you did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Don't lie to me.
Oh, she know, I wanted to say this. When you watch Wrestling with Shadows, you will see how instinctive and intuitive his wife is during this whole thing. Like, she calls it a few times leading up to the whole thing, and I thought that was pretty crazy.
Yeah. And to think, though, that, like, this documentary was being filmed while all this was happening. It's just like, perfect time.
It's almost too perfect.
It's almost too perfect. Now, I guess we can get into this theory right now. There is a theory out there that McMahon and Hart planned this whole thing as a huge work, and they're still working everyone today.
The biggest work in history.
Why do you think they would work us?
I don't know why. I don't know what their motive would be, just to do it, because it would be the greatest thing ever. But beyond that, which is pure speculation, I don't know what their motive would be to do this. And that's the thing that I have a trouble with saying it is a work, is like, I don't know why it would be.
Yeah, it doesn't make, like it being a work doesn't make sense to me all that much. Cause it's like, I don't know what the reasoning would be, you know, like, what do they stand to benefit from it being a work? And I guess, you know, I don't know, just cause I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. Now, but there are some things that it's like, okay, it's a little weird.
There's some. I think there's definitely credit to this theory, and one of the biggest things is the 30-day creative control at the end of the contract, right?
Yeah.
No matter how you look at it, no matter how you feel about that night, the fact of the matter is that Vince McMahon breached that contract by doing the Montreal Screwjob.
That's true.
Right, but there was never any legal follow up with that. Now, does Bret Hart just not pursue it legally out of respect for McMahon that he clearly did not have at this time? I don't know. To me, I think that's something that has to be addressed. Why didn't Bret Hart press charges or try to, you know, rectify this through legal action, given that he could, you know?
Now, okay, creative control, does that also entail who you win and who you lose to?
To the best of my knowledge, yeah. I mean, I don't think Brett would be, you know, big dick swinging saying he's not going to lose at Survivor Series if he didn't have some sort of ground to stand on, you know?
That is true. That is true. So I guess, okay. Well, man, shit. I mean, I would put myself over in every match.
Yeah. Hopefully, yeah, people don't get power hungry with it. Hulk Hogan. But, so, I mean, there's that. The fact that this Wrestling with Shadows is being filmed at this exact time.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely could be plausible explanations to why it happened at the same time. But it just seems so perfect. Like, you know, like Vince McMahon is going to decide to make this, like, huge, like offense towards Bret Hart while a documentary is being made about him. If he cares about PR, wouldn't he wait until the cameras were gone? I don't know.
Yeah, and it was like one of the few times, you know, I think really only this documentary, Wrestling with Shadows, and Beyond the Mat were the only two times I can remember like Vince letting in outside cameras, you know, into the right. WWE. And I don't know, a lot of people, you know, like, you know, the Beyond the Mat was billed as the movie Vince McMahon doesn't want you to see. But at the same time, I'm thinking, I think Vince wanted you to see it. I don't know. Just, you know, Vince isn't stupid. You know, I mean, we all know he's not stupid. So if he knew all this stuff was going on during the filming of the documentary that he gave clearance for to be backstage, and Brett, and the whole thing about Brett, remember in that scene in the movie where Brett's wearing a wiretap?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, Brett was wearing a wire. It just seems like, obviously, one, if this was a shoot and Brett was wearing a wire, wow, you obviously don't trust this man at all.
You wanted to record everything
that happened in that meeting. You obviously don't record him. I mean, don't, you know, trust him at all. So, I mean, there are some things that you could be like, okay, that makes sense. You know, it could be a work, but I don't know. My inclination is no, because of all the fallout that happened afterward is like, you know, and the thing about Brett, so Brett leaves, you know, literally the next night, is not on television. And he doesn't debut in WCW for a month, right?
Give or take. A good stretch of time, given that, you know.
Given that he was the hottest thing ever at this point.
Right.
Like, Vince really built him up before he let him go. But let's actually, before I moved to the WCW thing, we almost forgot. So after the match, Brett's breaking things, smashing monitors on the announce table, kicking and screaming, and then he actually goes back and he Vince lets him punch him in the face.
Right.
And knocks him out.
What's been said is that Vince McMahon kind of like just was like, "I'm gonna take my lickings," is almost, you know, what the story is.
He's a better man than me.
Yeah, dude, I'm not gonna let a professional wrestler punch me in the face.
Yeah,
it's free. All right, I deserve it.
Yeah, right. You know, hey, man, that might speak to the actual man that Vince McMahon is. You know,
yeah,
a lot more of a man than I am. I'll put that out there.
Right.
I'm not doing that.
So allegedly there was this physical altercation between Brett and Vince McMahon. No footage of it, mind you.
But there is a black eye.
Yeah. There is a black eye that I've actually read that people are not convinced that black eye was legitimate.
It could be makeup.
Yeah, it could be.
I mean, they had makeup artists in the back, you know. I mean, this just supports the work theory that it was all a work, but...
Right.
So then this happens, and then, you know, that's when... Now, this is honestly what started the Vince McMahon character, was the next night on Raw when he comes out. I believe it was the next night on Raw when he comes out and does, "Brett screwed Brett. I have no sympathy whatsoever for Brett," right?
And it's a huge moment. It's a huge moment.
Huge moment. And it honestly, to me, is what started Mr. McMahon, the character. And what really,
without a doubt,
really kicked in the ass, the Attitude Era.
I think this was the first time that Vince McMahon saw how him, like, screwing over a good guy or, you know, being a negative force against somebody that people pulled for could be, like, really marketable. You know, I think he saw the backlash of this and was like, hey, there's something here.
Yeah, because the evil boss is something everyone could relate to at the time. And it was just like, let's run with it. I think Vince said, you know, everyone sees me as this evil bad guy. Let him think it, you know? Why not?
And it was a brilliant move.
And he remained on WWE television for, you know, the next 10 or so years before he kind of, you know, kind of really stepped away a lot. But he was mainly in those 10 years a mega heel all the time.
For sure. Yeah, and the legacy of the Montreal Screwjob, Vince McMahon and his company WWF, later WWE, benefited the absolute most. And if I think if you like you break down the legacy into three main people, which would be Vince, Shawn, and Bret. Vince McMahon came out smelling pretty good at the end of all this.
Yeah, I mean, he really didn't lose. And then McMahon, I mean, because obviously without Mr. McMahon, the character, you wouldn't have Stone Cold Steve Austin as big as he right. was.
Right.
And you know, like the Bret Screw Bret thing, you know, was inspired, you know, by this whole thing. And it was great. And then this also led up into, do you remember what happened Survivor Series 1998?
Oh yeah, for sure.
The Deadly Game tournament, and yeah, they redid
came down to yeah with Rock and Mankind. They did the same ending.
Yeah, they did the same ending with I believe it was referee Earl Hebner. Like still, I'm like ooh.
Oh yeah.
Kind of poor taste in my mind. It's like okay.
Yeah, for sure, but definitely poor taste. But it was the Attitude Era. There was a lot of things in poor taste.
Yeah. That's saying something. But, you know, so Bret leaves, goes, debuts in WCW like a month later to where he's almost right. cooled off a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. There was something so, so disappointing about Bret Hart in WCW as a fan.
It never took. You know what I mean? It's like you think you can just transplant this huge star from one company to the other, but WCW just didn't know what to do with him.
And I think, you know, that is such a great example of why WCW failed, that they were given Bret Hart right
on a silver platter. They were given Bret Hart on a silver platter.
And they didn't like, it's not that they didn't know what to do with him. It's like they made him a special guest referee in Hogan versus Sting and had him competing for the secondary belt and just not. He should have been the biggest star there, at least for a year, you know, since his debut.
I believe he wrestled several times for the U.S. title and for the TV title even.
Yeah, yeah. So he wasn't main eventing pay-per-views. He wasn't competing for the heavyweight championship. And it was such a disgrace.
But he did. He was WCW champion, right?
He was. It was later down the line. I think it was in 2000. Maybe at the end of 1999 and then at the beginning of 2000 is when he was part of that picture. But it was brief compared to the time that he was there, and it took way too long to happen.
So he was there from pretty much 1998 to 2000, right?
Yeah, more or less, yeah.
And during those times, man, is when Owen's unfortunate accident happened in Kansas City.
Right.
And then Pillman died before he left the company, I believe. I mean, after he left the company, too.
I think it was before.
Was it before Pillman?
Yeah, I believe so.
It might have been before. And, you know, he just had – and then Davey Boy, I think, passes in, what, 2001?
Yeah, so around that time period. Yeah,
I mean, and the only guy he had left was Neidhart out of that last Hart Foundation. And it was just – and then it led up to that kick by Goldberg, which ended his career.
Right.
Just, man, he kind of went down after that.
It got real dark for Bret Hart after Survivor Series 97, and it's sad. It really is kind of sad. His highlights in WCW were few and far between, and
it's like he goes out with you know Goldberg, which actually might be the only other guy in my opinion who's a bigger mark for himself.
He's huge. He's a huge mark for himself.
Oh man, Goldberg, man, who do you think? Never mind, that's another podcast. But that's a whole other podcast, is Goldberg. So Bret Hart goes out, then he ends up having the stroke and, you know, falling off his bike, having a stroke. And then you, on the opposite side of the coin, Shawn, you know, toward what is the end of, was it 98? Yeah, after WrestleMania, pretty much, with Austin, WrestleMania 14, Shawn's gone. Yeah.
Right, yeah. He had, like, seriously, seriously fucked up his back in a match with Undertaker. And
Royal Rumble casket match.
He had to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, casket match. And he, like, it was, you know, him wrestling in the WrestleMania match must have been, like, excruciating.
I mean, you see it all over his face in that match.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No, for sure. It's
dying.
It's a painful match to watch. But, again, that's not what we're talking about. But Shawn Michaels Even through that period when he was on the bench, he was still able to appear on Raw as like the general manager, the commissioner, I should
say. Commissioner Michaels.
Right, yeah. And just, you know, he was still able to participate in the product in a fun way. But of course, he made an official return a few years down the line.
I mean, he came back. Yeah, I mean, he came back almost 4 years later, not even wrestling a match ever. In 2002 to go at SummerSlam in an unsanctioned contest with Triple H, which he won via Schoolboy or something like that. And then, you know, then he has this huge, then I think it was a few months later at Survivor Series, once again, first Elimination Chamber, and he wins the world title, you know. And then he comes back and, you know, has this amazing, two amazing matches with The Undertaker at WrestleMania.
Shawn Michaels had a second career almost. It was glorious. I mean, it was like true legend shit, you know what I mean? Like WrestleMania classics with Flair and Undertaker, you know, classic feud with Chris Jericho. Like he had like this whole second wind
that yeah, Bret Hart
never had.
You know, great feud in my opinion with Triple H and then yeah, you know, two or three DX reunions. I mean, there was a whole nother life to Shawn Michaels after the Montreal Screwjob and after he came back from that back injury. And then Bret, you know, just, I didn't hear anything about Bret Hart from the time he got out of the business in 2000 up until 2006 when, first off, WWE and him, you know, Vince and him made up pretty much. And I believe what happened was after Bret's stroke, Vince was like the first person to call him.
That's right. Yeah. That's what Bret Hart has said. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Vince was the first person to call him and, you know, check in on him and kind of almost, you know, that kind of almost mended the relationship to some respect. And then, they did that DVD together. The Best There Is, The Best There Was, Best There Ever Will Be DVD. And, then there was the Hall of Fame induction.
Right, yeah, right. There was a lot done, including the Hall of Fame induction, the DVD. There was a lot of like goodwill on the part of WWE to kind of mend that relationship.
And I think for the most part, I mean, they did everything they could to, you know, bring that back full circle and to really, you know, make it up to Bret as best they could. But I do remember that he didn't appear at WrestleMania. You know how they always have the Hall of Famers come out and they all wave to the crowd or whatever? WrestleMania. And I remember Howard Finkel saying Bret Hart chose not to appear at WrestleMania because he felt uncomfortable before he announced.
What WrestleMania was that?
Let's see, it was 06. So, 06, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 22 or 23.
Okay.
I think it's 22.
Okay. Gotcha. He didn't show up. That's kind of whack.
It was kind of whack, and to me, though, it was even whacker of WWE, in my opinion, to point it out, though. Bret Hart did not want to show up because he was uncomfortable.
Yeah. Just why can't be with us tonight? Why's not that work?
You know? Yeah. He felt uncomfortable. Ha, 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 ha. Pussy.
When you compare the two competitors of that night, the Montreal Screwjob, Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, there's no question who it was able to really, truly move on from that event.
Yeah. No, definitely. And then we have to wrap this up. You know, we're at the 58-minute mark, so we're pretty much at the end of this podcast. But I do want to say, remember, I can't remember, was it 2009-ish or something, when Bret finally came back to WWE television?
Oh, yeah. I think it was, I want to say 2010, but it could very well be 2009.
Oh, no, here it is. December 14th, my birthday, actually, 2009, episode of Monday Night Raw, Vince McMahon came out to announce the nominees for Guest Host of the Year. Announcing Bob Barker, Dennis Miller. Bret Hart. I don't know. He came back in 2010, I believe.
Yeah. And he actually had a match with McMahon at WrestleMania that was not great.
No, but hey, you know what I will? That match was terrible. It was god-awful. But the thing I will say about it is the build-up was great. If you remember, Bret kind of screwed Vince because he like, I think he like pretended to break his arm or something in like a car wreck. if you remember, like
the, this is not ringing a bell for me.
Is it not? No, I think what happened was.
But I wasn't watching very heavy at this point.
Okay, but what happened was like Brett came back as like general manager or guest host or something like that, and Vince was like, you know, Vince was like, ha ha, I still screwed you, and they were gonna make up in the middle of the ring, and then I think Vince kicks him in the nuts or something like that, and then when Brett's leaving. I think Vince fires Brett again or something like that. I might be getting all of this wrong, but it sounds right. When Brett's leaving, a car backs up into his limousine and breaks his arm. And John Cena's the first guy on site to help out Bret Hart.
Of course.
And so anyway, breaks his leg. And anyway, Vince challenges Bret Hart to a WrestleMania match with a broken leg. And they sign contracts. And then Vince is all happy. He's like, ha, you have a broken leg. I'm going to kill you at WrestleMania. And then Bret Hart reaches under the table at the contract signing and reveals that his cast was fake. And he goes, Bret didn't screw Bret this time, Vince. Vince screwed Vince. And then, you know, attacks him and boom. And then I think that was the same year is when Shawn Michaels wrestled The Undertaker and had a near perfect match. Yeah.
That's what I was about to say. So there you go, folks.
That was the Montreal Screwjob. But
that's a credit to Bret's health at the time. You know, I mean, yeah. There's a lot of things out of his control. So.
And he hadn't been in a ring in 10 years.
Right, yeah. So.
And he had a health scare, so he probably went in the gym. And, you know, we are poking fun, but, you know, that's nothing to really make that much fun about. But the match, we can say, was terrible.
That's just We can confirm this.
We can confirm that the match was terrible. And a lot more terrible than the match that Vince and Shawn had at WrestleMania, which was actually a really good match. In my opinion.
There you go. Okay,
if we're comparing WrestleMania matches, I'm going to give it to Shawn and Vince over Bret and Vince, but honestly, Vince has no business being in the ring as much as I'd like to watch his matches. Excluding that amazing Buried Alive match he had with The Undertaker. Great match. Wrapping up here on the Montreal Screwjob, any closing comments, Kyle?
I know we're going a little over, so I'll keep this brief. But to me, this is one of the most interesting and fascinating things that's ever happened in professional wrestling. And I would want to encourage anybody that's listened to this podcast to watch the DVDs about it, read up on it, because it's interesting. And it's a great microcosm of why I love professional wrestling.
It's what brings it. You know, we talked about this in the last episode. It was a shoot. This is real life, y'all. Unless it was a work. But this was real life as far as we know, spilling out into television and pay-per-view and storyline. And this is what really makes wrestling so interesting for fans like Kyle and I and for all you listeners, is that stuff like this actually happens.
Right.
And it really...
Stranger
than fiction, indeed. Kyle Hubbard, thank you again. Thank myself again for coming back and blessing these fans. No. thank y'all, everybody, for tuning back into the Announce Table podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next topic yet to be announced. Stay tuned to our social media accounts. You can follow me at Brad Gilmore on everything. Go get Kyle Hubbard on Facebook. I'm still trying to get him to get an Instagram. And we're going to announce, we'll announce what our next topic is very soon. But this should give the wrestling world a lot to talk about for the next 2 weeks, Kyle.
I hope so.
I'll direct any hate tweets to your text messages.
Anyway, okay, sounds good.
Both going to get some. With that being said, I'm Brad Gilmore. That's Kyle Hubbard. And this has been The Announce Table. We will see y'all next time. Peace.